welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it.
My guest today is Paul Hedges, CEO and co-founder of Graphene and 2D materials specialist Applied Nanolayers. With many years of experience in engineering, marketing, and research, Paul has invaluable insights into the semiconductor industry gleaned from a number of high-profile roles. Welcome to the podcast, Paul.
Hi, Dan. Nice to meet you.
The first question I ask is, what brought you to the semiconductor industry?
It was quite a long while. I think from the point I think in when I joined a company called ITT Research back in the 70s. You know, prior to that, I'd the usual techie kid and getting into electronics in a very early age. But it really blossomed in the early 70s when I joined what was a 2,000 man research company and got involved in everything from radar systems through to integrated optics. And each time we were having a white sheet project, right? A project where the technology didn't exactly exist, but you had to create it. And so at that point, I was getting involved with, lithography and dry etch for a whole range of things, which included, I said, integrated optics, but also for semiconductors. So wind it forward until the mid-80s, and I left the UK and joined a European marketing arm of PerkinElmer doing tech marketing for the dry etch business. So yeah, that's how I got into the semiconductor industry. Came in from a military research company through to building your own kit and then joining the semiconductor equipment manufacturing arm of PE.
Oh, great. Interesting story. I used to work with PerkinElmer as well here in the Bay Area. So okay. What brought you to Nanolayers?
It came out, good bit of scar tissue over the decades, and like many people, I've been done a few things, included, as I say, I went to Sweden with Ericsson on some building companies, and then came back to the Netherlands in 2000 and was doing some IP scouting for some customers, and I met up with a couple of very smart guys at Leiden University, and we had a great time, and they were discussing with me what they were doing on growing graphene. And so they, my colleagues, who are now my co-founders, were very, very skilled in and knowledgeable about the growth of atom by atom of the material. And so around 2012, in fact, this is our 10th year as a company, summer 2012, we founded Applied Nanolayers with the intent of building a materials company which is able to serve the semiconductor industry. And we started off with graphene because from our perspective, that was going to be the hardest way of doing it. Start there for doing 2D materials and to do that at wafer scale. And to do that in a way which it could integrate into the semiconductor industry as it exists at the stage of automation, cleanliness, and performance that it requires. So that was the point we got to literally 10 years ago. Three men in a bar go and start a deep tech company and try to take it so it eventually becomes globally relevant.
So what are some of the key plans and hopes that the big chip manufacturers are wishing to realize by using graphene, particularly in the context of moving electronics beyond Moore's law?
Yeah, I think if you just consider the two parts of this, the more piece, is actually the entry point for graphene as the first of 2D materials, in that in more than more, you're adding more functionality. And in this case, you can add functionality on top of your existing established semiconductor technologies. To take an example of that, for IoT, for sensors, for biosensing as an example, or for photonic switching, you can utilize graphene as a active component there. And you're adding this functionality on top of well-developed foundry-type processes for making devices. So if you take the example of a biosensor, graphene is all surface, and you can get that to integrate on top of a stack of silicon, which will do all your RF-powered processing or near-field powering processing, and ultimately get yourself a biosensor chip which falls into the disposable price range and goes into the market with significant volumes. That is just one of a whole mountain of applications which turn up at the back end of the line first. And there's a rationale why they should be at the back end of the line first, is that, you know, the customers that we're seeing increasingly coming to us to do this. There's a good performance benefit, there's a good integration need, and of course in doing so you prove to the literally the underlying semiconductor industry that the material and its integration match the market and application need, and that nobody needs to go off and completely rip up their existing semiconductor manufacturing supply chain. So for us, that space of more than more, essentially the back end of line integration takes you into biosensors and photonic modulation. The more, where you today we're all aware of, you know, the shrinking of a die, or shrinking the components on the die into the EUV technologies to get into your 5 nanometers and beyond, there are some limitations there. Where we see graphene and other 2D materials such as hexagonal boron nitride and the transition metals becoming relevant there is actually at the front end of line. But I don't think that's a short-term activity. It's identified in the semiconductor IRDS roadmap, but you have to have all of the material supply, performance, reliability, cleanliness, and all of that perfect before you get that going anywhere near the front end of line. Currently, there are people doing some work on it in the research phase, but I think in the sort of 10-year span, I'd expect to see the back end of line integration well proven, devices out there in the marketplace, good volumes, and the applicability of adding the, you know, stacks of 2D materials into an early stage front end of line applications.
Got it. Interesting.
Yeah.
So how can graphene manufacturers and applications experts such as yourselves work effectively with the big manufacturers, the chip guys, to find the best manufacturing solutions using 2D materials?
I think what we've seen over the years is that the existing industry structure, which has been in place for at least 50 years, well, maybe 40 if we're being charitable, has been defined as being, you know, dep, lith, and etch. And for the foreseeable future, I think we don't expect to see that drastically changing. But for us to be able to work well together, we have to have a way of getting these 2D materials into the supply chain in a way which is, you know, sensible and is efficient. Now, currently, you won't be able to go out and buy a tool from a recognized manufacturer which is going to produce graphene at wafer scale and put it on a wafer and off you go. It requires a complete engineered solution. Now, we've done that over, you know, the last 10 years. So we've handled growing at wafer scale a material which is low defectivity. We've handled transferring that layer onto a arbitrary wafer, you know, customer wafer on the back end line, for example, at size. So all of those processes together are under one roof. So at the moment, we're doing a lot of work on the application space, particularly, say, in bio and for photonics. And what comes out of this is we're essentially a 2D material manufacturer where our wafers are one atom thick. Now, you know, getting a one atom crystal off your growth substrate and putting it onto your target wafer requires quite a lot of capabilities and expertise. And we've developed this in a way where we can work on our customers' early engineering applications with this and get them viable devices that work and they can scale to engineering volumes. And of course, we are now in the throes of expanding and growing our company such that we can service our customers with material integrated onto their wafers and ultimately provide the volume supply chain with structured wafers, which can be then put together in a process at the back end of line for our customers. So to do this, you should not attempt to, you know, do a thing which is already well done. So you have to focus on those applications which have a real market opportunity. And I say, you know, from the point of view of biosensing and for photonics, we can see the market relevance from those is clearly there. But to really get in volume and to be relevant for the supply chains, the whole mindset of a company doing this has to be towards the quality, reliability, and having real down to the detailed knowledge of how your customers' applications work and your supply chain partners' processes work. And we spend a lot of time on doing that. And so now we're in a situation where we're increasing the number of customer applications which are coming in the door, and we're getting into closer and closer relationships with, you know, good tier partners who will be supplying foundry services.
So what do you think needs to be achieved for graphene before the material can be considered ready for high volume manufacturing?
Well, I think it's a mindset thing. A lot of people have played with, you know, with graphene over the last decade or so since, you know, in the time we started. We've seen every form of, you know, material hype going around, and I think, you know, there's to be valid, to be usable here at scale, you have to be able to essentially have a high temperature growth material transferred at room temperature to a high value stack of silicon. That's the essential thing. So when people start talking about, well, yeah, we can do low temperature growth, what they're essentially saying to you is you're trying to do a deposition process And for a crystal, that doesn't really work very well. So the growth has to be optimized for the material. The material has to have a transfer methodology which does not create defects, puts the material where it needs to be, and does not introduce contaminants or introduce a cost penalty in how you go about doing this integration. So I think what we're seeing here is that the interest and the desire for the more at the back end of line integrations is there. There's applications for this. There is a market desire, and the important thing to make this work is to really work together with your customers and your foundry partners to ensure that everybody gets what they need in the best way to achieve this. So that means, particularly when you're dealing with the foundries, is to know, well, who's doing what stage of this process. Now, currently, the way that we find works very well is that we're in an early application phase with our customers. We can do a lot of the engineering and integration that ultimately would take place at a foundry where our process is fully deployed. But in the meantime, the capacity and to go to scale means that we actually have the end-to-end capability as we grow our company to supply them the material in a way that they can use as a simple bond process. So over time, we see the cost benefit analysis taking place between us and the foundry providers who have the underlying silicon that our customers will have these 2D materials attached to, as being focused towards where is the best part in the chain for them to operate in. So we occasionally see foundry partners coming to us and say, well, we've got a customer who wants this. Can you do it with us? And naturally, we look very closely into what do their processes look at the back end of the line with the degree of technology that the customer needs for the application. So at the current stage, it's very interactive. It's interacting between us and the customers with a very good application which goes to volume, and also it's us with a number of foundry partners over what back end is going to be suitable for integrating these 2D materials for a customer application, either in bio or in photonics. But ultimately, at high scale in a number of years into the future, then we'd expect to be providing wafer scale stacks of 2D materials. This may be individual materials in stacks, or in, you know, conductor, insulator, and semiconductor in stacks, going towards the front end of the line in due course.
Interesting. That's good to hear. I hear graphene talk about graphene quite a bit at conferences over the last couple of years. So that's good to know. But can you tell me, what's the future here? What are your expectations for graphene?
I think there's a realization, I think, that the where you use graphene and where you introduce it has to be at the appropriate stage. So there's been a lot of hope and a lot of enthusiasm where people want to, you know, use graphene in a whole range of ways, but you have to come down to which are the appropriate integrations that will work and make economic sense. As an example of this, over the years, we put our facility up next door to University of Delft in the Netherlands, which is a technical university. We do it for a number of reasons. One is that we were able to use their by CMOS line, which is right next door to our facility, and we also have a lot of projects which go on with doctoral and master's students, and some of those projects are good marketing projects. For example, at the the Mobile World Congress, one of the students was putting up a pressure sensor, which was based on using graphene as a pressure sensor, which when we looked at the sensitivity compared to what was state of the art from a sensor manufacturer, it was about a factor of 10 or 20 better than that for a 3-month project, which wasn't bad. But of course, this is a student project, it's not a volume manufacturer. And similarly, we've had all of our recent master's students put a sensor into space with our material on it for it went up in SpaceX literally on the 1st of April and is currently in orbit, and hopefully we should see some results from that. But I think if you're very clear about graphene, what it can do, there's obviously a lot of research still goes on about the future of it, whether it's in a quantum application, whether it's in a high frequency application. We would expect all of those applications to be improved by having it at wafer scale with known and reliable performance. But as a company, when we see applications coming our way, we have to focus on those applications which are really going to have a good market in a reasonable sense of time for them to be done, because it's not just going to be us, it's going to be us and foundry partners who ultimately have to see that there is a valid reason to be doing this. But from the point of view of application work or project work which gets done in research institutions, yes, we supply those too. And I think what we're noticing is that more people are coming to us from the point of view of the quality and reliability over the days than would have been the case earlier on. I think this, the industry, if you can call it an industry, it's still an early stage, is kind of maturing, but there's also a realization that you have to make your devices or show your devices on the scale which is relevant to the global semiconductor industry. And that means that it's no good making a device which is the size of your thumb when, to be economically viable, these devices should be sub-millimeter die sized, and not the case where the researchers bond pad looks larger than the die. So there's quite a bit of growing up going on in this sort of community, which has migrated from purely academic to I think in the not too distant future becoming more of an industry. We started out with the unusual starting point, as we had both very skilled academics and some folks who were pretty hard-nosed coming out of the industry and knew what was the best way of doing the development of the company such that it could be scaled globally. So it's quite an interesting position to be in, but took a while.
That's exciting. Hopefully we can have you back and talk a little bit more about the SpaceX project, because that's of interest.
Oh yeah. We got a tube ride, and it worked out very well.
Yeah. So, how do they contact you, Paul? Companies that are interested in working with you, or customers. You have the website nanolayers.com. What do people do generally when they reach out to you?
Normally send us an email to info@appliednanolayers.com, and from there in, the folks who are able to clearly identify themselves, they have a recognizable company, then we are happy to engage with them. We have skilled business developers who will take contact with them and get to understand what their needs are. And I say we're very application rich at this stage in the development of the company. So we go really down to the basic core of what they're trying to achieve, and approach it in a way where we can get our customers or potential customers to an engineered solution which can go to volume. That is quite a task to do, but once we and they have established, you know, what we're trying to do together, then we'll put the effort in with them to achieve it. But, you know, at this stage, you know, you can have somebody who's, whether it's a small company or a large company, which may have spent quite a lot of time and energy on trying to make a sensor, and they don't have the material supply chain or the integration knowledge to do that properly. And we are able to do that. We can, for the more academic players, we can supply them with application development kits. But ultimately, what we have seen is once people have figured out that, you know, trying to do some of this themselves is painful, an application development kit gets them to the point where they can decide, is this the path they want to go along? But once they work with us, they realize that, you know, we're able to get them into a mode where they can be far more successful in the early stage, but also make choices which enable you to get closer to manufacturability in a shorter space of time.
Great. Hey, thank you, Paul, for your time. And we hope to have you back to talk about SpaceX. And everybody for listening in, and have a good day.
Danny, thanks very much. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.